Phil Pelletieri, thanks for joining us today.
It's nice to be here.
I guess my first question is, we know there are a lot of ticks in Wisconsin. Have you seen any trends in terms of their population over the past 10 or 20 years?
You know, there really is about 20 different kind of ticks, but only about three or four that are important for humans as far as disease transmission. And if you take that kind of time span, the deer tick has moved from the northwest part of the state within the last 10 years in particular. Now we would expect to find it in any one of the counties in the state. And so it kind of moved from northwest to southeast. The other thing is that the percent infectivity with Lyme disease in particular was hovering about 18% a good 10, 15 years ago. Now it's hovering around 40% in the adult populations of ticks. And so those things are one of the explanations of why we see more Lyme disease.
What are the differences generally between northern Wisconsin, where we are, and southern Wisconsin tick populations?
Well, you know, it's not directly correlated, but there is a deer density effect. And so where you have higher deer populations, it's not surprising to see higher tick numbers. But generally speaking, if you get in a wooded area that has a lot of wildlife, I honestly don't expect to see a whole lot of difference. The one tick that we're starting to see on the radar screen a little bit more is really a Missouri tick that we call the Lone Star tick. And although we had almost every year seen a couple of specimens come into the lab, there's really strong evidence that they're starting to breed in the state. But this is primarily something we're seeing in the southern third of the state so far. So,
from a biology standpoint, why do ticks carry so many diseases? I mean, Lyme disease is the biggest one, but there are a lot of others. What is it about a tick that makes it such a good disease vector?
Well, you know, it turns out that the ticks that we normally deal with only feed three times in their life, but they feed on a diversity of animals. And really the dynamic with Lyme disease and the anaplasmosis and the other things that the deer ticks are transmitting is that these are rodent diseases. And these things have a preference for feeding on rodents when they're young. As they mature, they tend to have a stronger preference for larger animals. And so what these things are is a bridge from taking from the rodent and then infecting dogs, people, that kind of thing.
I see. So their food source is a kind of creature that often carries a lot of diseases as well.
Right. But the interesting dynamic is that what we, all of us, call the wood tick, but technically called American dog tick, has not been proven to transmit the disease. So you need a certain relationship between the tick and the disease to have a successful transmission. And again, the interesting thing about the deer tick is that it has this whole litany of things it transmits. With the wood tick that we have here, what's quite interesting is that in other parts of the country, it's the prime vector of Rocky Mountain spotted fever. That really is a non-issue in this state. We've got the tick, but not that disease. But as I said, with the deer tick, you've got a number of things you have to pay attention to.
And we've been hearing kind of mixed reports as to whether this year's long winter, cold winter, will have an effect on insect populations. What's your prediction for ticks?
Well, you know, I've seen people predict that the ticks are going to suffer, and I'm just not sure where the science is to support that. You know, ticks get down in the leaf litter, and they're under the snow cover, and so they're far better insulated. And so the one thing that I have seen have some effect is young ticks in particular are very sensitive to drying out. So extreme hot, dry conditions, I see affect tick populations, but I can't see anything in the winter. I'm not expecting any surprises one way or the other, and would expect once it finally warms up and gets above 50 degrees consistently, snow's off the ground, it's tick season.
How do ticks survive the winter? Do they go into sort of a dormancy or a hibernation?
You can call it a hibernation. We technically call it diapause. It's a little different. But, you know, the interesting thing about both insects and ticks is that, you know, if you get a drastic change in temperature very quickly, the shock can kill it, these animals. But if you give them a chance to adapt, so you get the normal cooling in the fall, they basically go dormant. And being cold-blooded animals, they can't be active at all below 45 degrees. So they just kind of go dormant. But the interesting thing is that they don't allow their tissues to freeze. And so when things finally warm up enough, it's kind of like you wake them up and they're off and running. And they can go on and off in a couple-day period of time. It's not something that, you know, really takes that long for them to adapt to this stuff. So even if you wake them up and then you get a couple freezes, that's not going to affect them at all.
Well, Phil Pelletieri, I think that's all the questions I have. Thank you so much.
Okay, well, you know, hopefully, as I said, people will be lucky enough not to run into too many.